Morning, you've asked to speak about the topic of the Masik Sufim. And the Masik Sufim itself is a long-standing machlokas, a long-standing debate whether Masik Sufim giving a tenth of one's income is that mitzvah d'oraisa. It's a very, very few hold that position, that it has to do with the master onik. That we notice that we did d'oraisa. When we are living there in Israel, then we have to give every third year, we give a tenth of our crops for aniyim. So there were those who understood that that carries over in our own time to be masik sofim, a tenth of one's income. But most of the svarim, most of the rishonim and achronim argues to whether it's a mitzvah derabbanan or whether it's a minhag. The Maharam and Maharam Rothenberg and later on in the Yehuda held that Masir Sofin in our own time is a mitzvah derabbanan, the fee of derabbanan. The Chazal established when there's no Masir Ani, or the different ways of saying it, or they established based on Masir Ani an obligation to derabbanan to give a tenth of his income. And the Maharil and the Chasam Sofer and the Kamisyor held that the giving Masir Sofin is a minhag, it's a custom. What are the nafka means that most of the posts will take the view that giving masik sofim is a minhag, it's a custom. What's the difference whether it's a minhag or whether it's a din derabbanan? So first of all, if it's a minhag, when a person begins the practice, it's better to say that it's blei neder. Why should we get ourselves unnecessarily involved in obligation of a neder if one year we're not able to give masik sofim? So, or if we forget to give masik sofim, then we're not exactly so a person. Since we paskin that it's has the din of a minog, so before one establishes that practice of giving masik sofim, it's wise to say that it's a dan b'li neder. Another nafkamina would be if, let's say, 1 month the person falls short. 1 month the person, let's say, a person is giving masik sofim on a monthly basis. And in one given month his expenses are much greater than his income. So for that month, if we say that Masik Sofim is a mitzvah drabbanan, so then we would say the person is still obligated to give Masik Sofim. Halach is that an oni is chayv, if an oni is a farmer, a per person is a farmer, and he has a tenth of, and he's giving Maser oni once every 3 years, so even if he himself has trouble supporting himself, he's less to give a tenth of his crops. So if it's a mitzvah derabbanan, if it's a din derabbanan, Chazal established the mitzvah masik sofim, so then that would probably follow the pattern of maser oni, and be incumbent upon us even if for 1 month we're very, very tight. We paskin that the masik sofim is a minhag. So we assume that when Klal Yisrael accepted this minhag, when this minhag was portrayed for us, if a person could accept it later on, that within the understanding that they have the money. They don't have the money, then that's okay. If you give the Masik Sofim that month. Another nafkamina would be if a person can borrow against his Masik Sofim. Let's say a person has many, many requests, one in particular month. And he asks, there's more pressure to give stock on one particular month, or one particular year, one half year, let's say. So what he wants to do is he wants to advance his Masik Sofim. He figures over the course of the year, the course of the next year and a half, 2 years, he's going to be giving, let's say, $10,000 in Masik Sofim. And he figures, well, right now he's under a lot of pressure to give $7,000, $8,000 Masik Sofim, money which he hasn't earned yet. So is he allowed to borrow against his future Masik Sofim, expend in advance? And then next year, when he earns money, he'll cut back at his Masik Sofim. He'll give less Masik Sofim next year. So now Rabbi Yehuda says that this would depend on whether Masik Sofim is a mitzvah or a minhag. If it's a mitzvah, it means Chazal said, as you earn money, you tithe, you give. So next year, when I earn my money, then the mitzvah derabbanan to give, to tithe my income. So the fact that I was a tzaddik last year and gave extra, that doesn't exempt me from my obligation to tithe the income as it comes in. On the other hand, if Masik Sofim is a minhag, and that's how we paskin, as they wrote post Svarim paskin. So then, again, a minhag is not so rigid. So the minhag is, not that I'm tithing my maaser, but over time I give a certain amount. So if I want to advance and borrow from my Masik Sofim of next year, that would be mutter, and I think that's how we would pass it. There's another nachman that Chavetz Chaim discusses. Chavetz Chaim has a sefer called Avas Chesed, and in the sefer Avas Chesed, he has a chapter on Masik Sofer. So there the Chavetz Chaim writes that how accurate must a person be in figuring out their Masik Sofer? Can a person, sometimes it's very, very easy to figure out Masik Sofer, but sometimes it's on a salary. When he sees at the end of the month how much one is getting, so it's a little bit easier. But sometimes a person is making investments. A person has a retail business, and it's continuously, it's hard to figure out exactly what is this month income. Maybe he doesn't balance the books every single month. Maybe through the course of a half year or so. Or maybe he's not so precise in maintaining his books. So then the Chavetz Chaim says that would Masik Sofer be a din de Rabbanan, when Chazal have established a din, then a person has to the best of his ability, be precise. Since we established that it's a minog, so therefore the Chavetz Chaim writes, a person can make the best possible estimate and fulfill his obligation in Masik Sofer that way. In the midst of Masik Sofer, let's put it in the context of the mitzvah of tzedakah. How does it fit into the mitzvah of tzedakah per se? So the mitzvah of tzedakah has several parts to it. Number one is the mitzvah of tzedakah that's Baruch Hashem very easy to fulfill. The mitzvah deraisa of giving tzedakah. The mitzvah deraisa of giving tzedakah over the course of a year is to give several dollars a year to a poor person. That's what you make time the mitzvah deraisa of tzedakah. The mitzvah say to give tzedakah is a third of the shekel over the course of a year. Rav Chaim Kanievsky estimates that to be about 6.4 grams of silver, whatever the going rate of silver is, several dollars over the course of the year. So the Min Chasani, the Sefer of Spitz, Yerushalmi, on tzedakah, that's the mitzvah they rise of tzedakah. When the minhag of giving a small coin every single day, that was established, the Sfarim said that was established, that we have a minhag that during davening we give tzedakah, because it's a schus for our tefillah to give tzedakah. Many people have the minhag to give tzedakah, says in the Sfarim, to give in the Siddurim, to give, right. So the mitzvah was to have a gabbai tzedakah go around and collect. So there the minhag was to give the smallest coin, to give a nickel, a dime a day. Why? Because over the course of the year, one is assured that it was filled the mitzvah of tzedakah that way. So that's the mitzvah they rise of giving tzedakah. But then there's a lav. There's an isa they rise of. And that's where we feel this on a much more ongoing basis. And that's the din they rise of al ta'amitis levamukam. That's the mitzvah that we can, if somebody asks us for money, we're not allowed to turn them down. We can't close our hands to our friends, to our neighbors, to our brothers. Some of the Rishonim quote a pasuk from David HaMelech, al yoshik daf niflam, it isn't allowed to send a poor person away. A person comes and asks for money, then there's a mitzvah deraisa to respond. There's an isa deraisa, I should say. The mitzvah deraisa, we said. Then there's an isa deraisa to turn a poor person away. What does it mean to turn him away? How responsible do we have to be? So here there are two different levels. And that really is up to the oni to choose on what level he wants to be dealt with. An oni can choose to be an oni afezer al apsachim. He can choose to say that he's going to the entire community. He's going to many communities. He's going to be afezer al apsachim. He's going from door to door to ask for funds. That's one approach. But the other approach is the oni could say, I'm going to go to an individual. I'm going to go to one individual and ask him, and if he can't help me out, I'll go to another individual. He has a choice of being a chayzal of sofim, or is a choice of referring to one person. Now, and then the obligations of response are different. If an oni comes to me and he says he's not going from door to door, so then I have the obligation of responding de machsoro. I'm helping him out to the extent that I can in taking care of all of his needs, whatever his needs are. In other words, to put him back into the position where he's, where the position that he was in. Dei machsoro, whatever his needs are, whatever his psychological needs are. That's the Gemara gives examples of taking care of a person even far beyond the norm of society, because that was what he was used to. Because dei machsoro is a psychological need as well. There are more recent svarim that discuss that seems to be unreasonable that we should maintain a person year after year after year and beyond, well beyond his means and the communal means. So some suggest it means that you have to bring him back, bring him down slowly. But a padei machsaro means to take care of a person's needs, and those needs are defined by his position as it is, and they are to deal with him in terms psychologically, make sure that he doesn't feel that he's that the tragedy and difficulty of not having being able to live in the way that he was used. So that's day machsar. So even if it means that nowadays that machsar means that we slowly bring him down, if we think it's a long-term issue, that's the din of taking care of him. Let's say his day machsar is more than my means. It's more than my, that I'm able to help him out. So then obviously we have to include some other people. It's more than my masik suffering. Right, so he has great needs of day machsorah. I can't provide for all of them. So I would end up giving almost all of my tzedakah money to help this person, and then I may have to co-opt somebody else. So again, that is a rare situation that happens nowadays. It could happen. Sometimes it happens for a relative or karev, and that's very, very important. That mibsorah al tisaleh, that one's karev, one's relatives always come first. Sometimes it happens that we are aware of a person whose business is slipping, and we have the opportunity to do the Akhazakhtubo, to be able to help his business and stop him from slipping. Ram says that's one of the greatest mitzvahs. So those are situations where the mitzvah of staka falls on an individual, a few individuals. The response is an enormous response. And not to respond would be Nisa Deiraisa, again, within the means of the Baal staka. And that could mean that the Baal Staka may have to rearrange his priorities for that for a period of time. Because if a person comes, it could be that I have to respond much more generously this year to some member of my mishpacha who might be slipping, but that's the mitzvah staka. And then that takes priority over other needs for any given time. The more common situation that we have is an oni who decides it's in his best interest to be a chayzer al apsachim. In his best interest to go from door to door. Then the obligation of the individual is to be part of the community, one of the host of Baalei Tzedakah. Then my obligation is to respond. When a person goes from door to door in a large city, so then my law is I have to give him a ton of muedas. Then my obligation is very small. Here, Yaakov Yisrael Fisher of Tzal, the Eid HaCharedis in Yerushalayim, the Beit HaCheshbon in Yerushalayim, the person responds by giving 10 agarot. So that is enough of a response. Right? So we would give maybe 10 agarot. It's very, very little. But the point is that my obligation shifts tremendously. That's the only decision. If he decides to go to Bechazal of Sochem, if he decides to go from door to door, so then he spreads the obligation of response to the entire community. He may even spread it to numerous communities, going from city to city. And then my obligation is to be minimally responsive. And the Gemara discusses about being responsive, of giving the Oni a meal for the day, giving a place to sleep. But the person is going from door to door in the course of a day, so I can be minimally responsive. What about the situation where we get mail solicitations? Where every day in the mail, we have numerous solicitations. Is that in the category of a chayzer al apsachim ad kirei kach that if I don't respond to the mail, so I'm over on al ta'amets eslevavcha leisikvitz gadcha meyachicha. So that has always concerned me, and there are different minhagim. And I have friends who grew up on the Lower East Side and were close to Rav Moshe. They remember that Rav Moshe twice a year would go to the bank and get a shoebox of single dollars. And then he would respond to all of the letters that he got in the mail. But, you know, nowadays the one shoebox half a year would not go very far. It's only good size that the shoebox would help. But apparently that was his approach, that he thought that was, can't interpret from a vice of Rabbi discussing, it seems to be. On the other hand, and that's Rabbi Yaakov Yishaya Blau, one of the Gedali Yerushalayim, who wrote a sefer on Staka. So he is also concerned for this position. Why is that? Because of the sefer called the Rishon LeTzion, who makes the following point, that the Al-Sa'amitz is Yadkos. The Al-Sa'amitz is Lubav, our prohibition of being closed-hearted, not responding. Are we over that Easter only if the Oni is Mamish right in front of us? That's what some have suggested. Chaim Kanievsky supports that position. If he's right in front of me, then there's an Easter of being close-hearted. But if I get the information in the mail, So then if I'm closed, I don't respond, that's not such a strong violation. That's not Isur D'oraisa. And the Rishon LeZion writes that even being aware of it's not the confrontation, not responding to the confrontation, it's not responding to a need that I'm aware of. So once you become aware of the need, I'm obligated to respond. So that's, again, a machlokas, a poskim, it's a machlokas amongst the Sfarim, the Shubas. There was the Adam Gadol and Mansi wrote the Kuti Lopez and stuff of the Shamsi Vigdor. He had a tremendous Lamachof, and I think he may have moved the part of the year to Eretz Yisrael now. So Shamsi Vigdor, in his Sefer, the Kuti Lopez, he takes the position that when it's obligated to respond. And Reb Chaim Kanievsky takes the position that unless you actually see the Ani right in front of you, then there's no Isur in not being responsive. Reb Chaim Kanievsky is quoted in Svarim as having numerous reasons why he thinks one can be makil on this male solicitations. One is that there's no confrontation, and the other is, and he thinks the position that the knowledge itself is a machayev is not the mainstream position. He also feels that many of the male citations are not being sent out by the Oni. They're sent out by other people besides the Oni. They're sent out often by lists, by professional lists. So if I, and we're only talking about poor people, not talking about if a institution sends me a million that's pachol on it, that's not under the category of the Al-Samit's Yadcha. Right? It's only the yeshiva sends me, that's not Al-Samit's Yadcha. If a poor person, if one gets these tragic discussions and portrayals of what's going on in the mail, am I in violation of Al-Samit's Yadcha? In that case, so there, Shapsi Vigda said that it would be awesome not to respond even minimally, even to send something. And Chaim Kanievsky said there would not be a violation. So one of the reasons that he gave is because when it may not be sent out by the Oni. It may be sent out by some professional group. Or he said also that when we send them out, so we don't expect everyone's going to respond. There's a certain percentage that people expect will be a certain response and make that a judgment. So Chaim Kanievsky says, Misvara, he doesn't really have strong sources, but he says, Misvara, if the Oni is not expecting an ongoing response and it may not be sent out by the Oni, and it's not a personal confrontation, he thinks that there isn't an Isur of Al-Tahamit Yadma not to respond. And he is 90. When I went through when I was thinking about this, so I thought more in line with Yaakov Yishai Blau and Shapsi Victor that it would be an issue. That I have to assume that Rove Gedolim hold as no Isur. Why? Because so many Gedolim sent out solicitations, if they would hold that it would be Osir not to respond, there'd be Machshel, the Rabbin, over and over again. every single day. So I have to assume that the Gedolim Yisrael hold that it's not a violation of Isur D'oraisa, and it's an opportunity, and kind of mitzvah stalker, but the Isur D'oraisa of Asamis Lavovka, I have to assume they assume is only when there's an ongoing issue. So we're putting the mitzvah of Maisik Sofim, again, into the context. There is a mitzvah of tzedakah. That is easy to mekayim, only a few dollars a year. There's an iser not to be responsive. Al-Sa'amitz is yadma. All right? And then, where do these funds come from? So these funds come from, they can come from a percentage of my income. And the common minug that suggested that we adopt is that it should come from a tenth of my income. Now we have to discuss, number one, can a person give more than a tenth? We have to discuss exactly where the tenth come from, and what is the range of the addresses to which the tenth can go to. All right?
That's still a question. Did you say, if you're talking about, say, letters in the mail, things like that, then you get the problem of email. I get someone to be emailed everywhere in the world with no cause.
Yeah.
I don't even know who it's getting to, but maybe it gets to you, and you're obligated to stuff.
So that's the issue.
It's probably the 5 seconds later to you. Yeah. No cause, no interaction.
No. The issue is whether it's the awareness of the need which creates the obligation, right? Or is it the physical meeting? But the same issue.
the effort that it takes for the audio to show up actually come to you or anyone?
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know.
A phone call still has some compensation. An email is even less of
a phone call. There's some kind of meeting. Right. So phone call would probably be in between a visit and even a mail.
Right.
So that's probably even less. No, if you open a publication, so there the only is not, he's not asking you.
You're talking about Yediyah. The issue is Yediyah.
If Yediyah, then right.
But tell me about this.
Yeah.
What's the definition of it? Because sometimes if you give like a dollar to a shul who comes to the door, he'll be insulted. Right? Or a non who comes to the door says, you know, they've come with all these letters, these folks are here's $2. They're like, yeah, what do you mean $2? <Yeah. laughs> is there a, you know.
I don't think so. I think that the person has to know how. In the context of what he's giving, this person may have given a huge amount to some situation that he's close to, but he doesn't have that much money left to give to people who come around. That's the biggest nisoyan of giving tzedakah is giving it the same upon him yokos. So the Rama writes that it's much better to give. I don't think the Anim agree with the Rama.
They'd be happy to get $1,000 for the frown and $5 for the smile.
Rama says it's much more important to give even less, but to give to feel good about it. They should give a larger amount and make the ani feel uncomfortable. But that's why then you have a lot is to give it to guidance of me.
What if there's no solicitation? You just see a poor person on the street who doesn't solicit.
Right.
Are you obligated to give money? Or you find out that it is real, there are a lot of hungry people. You don't get solicited.
Right, so with the question.
Are you obligated to give money?
The question is, are you over allowed? No, that's the question. Are you over allowed by not responding? So, I think when it's not over, again, that's the issue before, is when over alav, because one's aware of the need. That's the machlokas of poskim. If I know of a need, I don't respond at all. That's the machlokas of poskim of whether, so most poskim say that it's not the awareness, and most poskim say it's the request. There's the three issues. One is the awareness, the request, or to have a face-to-face request. So most poskim say that I'm only over the lav if it's not a face-to-face request. I think there's a significant position that I'm over a lav if there is a request but it's not face-to-face. And there's a very minority view that probably would not be concerned about that the knowledge alone, not responding to the awareness of a knowledge, that's a lav. You right?
Besides, why should
he
go to 50 people in the
market? Right, it's a good question. How can the Ani should decide whether I should be supposed to support him? Shaul was supposed to support him. So that was, often bothered me. Why should it be that the Ani, I think the Hezbollah is like this. That if an Ani pours his heart out, and we're talking about a person who's going through a very difficult time. So he gets to decide. If it causes him such pain to pour his heart out to one person, then I have to respond that. But sometimes you have situations because the person is so embarrassed that he needs to come, and he needs to come to see you. He's having such terrible difficulties. So finally he gets up the guts to speak to one person and pour his heart out. So that gives me an obligation to work with
me. That gives me an obligation to help other people.
No.
If I'm not in a position.
Right. It would be a chesed to help him out more than that. But if you see that you can't help him, then you may tell him in advance how much you're able to help him out. But that's the head for why only can decide. He can decide if he's comfortable talking to lots and lots of people. If he comes with the letters, then he feels in a better interest. But if he decides that the person chooses me, so what does that mean? That means that it can be so hard for him to unload himself after being in the
situation. Wasn't there a story you said that choose you? Do you think because you gave up sort of, do you think it up to your master or up to your full meter? Like, after you give up, what's happening here, are you done, or do you have more of that?
No, so the thing is only if you give a 10. Even if you should say, if he is to give a 10, the minimum is to give only up to a 10. Can one give more? That's a question. Can one give more than 10? The Vilna Gaon wrote at Savo that one should give up to 1/5 of one's income, 20%. The Vilna Gaon has, and in his Savo, and as well, he writes that the children should be very, very concerned about that. So that the Achronim discuss, if a person wants to give more than 10, he wants to give up to 20%, up to 1/5. So then that certainly is, a person can certainly give up to 1/5, and if he can, he should give up to 1/5. Right? That's the, person has the means to give up to 1/5. Can a person give more than 1/5? That's what the post can discuss. Because the Gemara says, a person should not throw around his money more than a chomesh, because otherwise he may end up coming to be, on the roles of those who need. So let's say a person would want to give more than up to 1/5, so that's what a person should strive. It depends on the person's need, depends what else is happening, depends what the other needs are. But if up to beyond 1/5, so there are more rights that one's allowed b'shas misa, a bottle of slan, a person's giving out his funds for what's going to happen, the Acham may have esrim, so then we're not afraid that he's going to become star halabrios. So then he can give more than 1/5. The Avas Chesed, the Chavetz Chaim writes that there are certain situations where a person can give more than 1/5. One is if he's an unusually wealthy person. The other is if it's Sakonis Nefashis, if it's the concern of somebody might help somebody who is in danger of losing their life. If it's a situation of where the poverty is dire poverty. Chavetz Chaim writes, he quotes the Shinu Kubetz, if I want the Sfus of Talmud Torah, if I want to support a person who's learning and share in that person's source, that person's sar, so then I can go more than 1/5. And the Bach writes that Rabbanim are allowed to give more than 1/5. Why Rabbanim? It's Bach writes Rabbanim and I think Machan. Why? He brings an example from Rabbi Gamliel. He used to give more. He was very, very generous. So the Bach writes because the Rav understands that the tzibur will never let him go hungry. Right? So Rabbi has the confidence. No person.
Really?
Well, no. Not my president. So I always say, I don't know if the Balabatan passed like the Ba. and then the Minchas Alozer writes, the two situations a person gives more than 1/5. One is he did it as a kapara. He wants, if he feels that he needs, he wants to bring like a korban. He can give more than 1/5. And the other situation, he says, if he got money without any Torah, without any person got money from the sweepstakes or something, with no tirch at all, so then the Minchas Alozer also is a cheshbon that maybe would give more than 1/5. But coming back to your question, so the midah beinonis is to give up to ma'aser. And then there is a praiseworthy midah if a person is able to give up to 1/5. And the Gemara felt very strongly about that. And then giving more than 1/5 only under these situations that... some of the questions that we should look at, we're in a tight schedule because the con is coming in soon. So what is the schedule? 11 o'clock. Oh, so 11, then we'll give you just a few principles. Good. What do we give Masik Sofim from? All right? So one has to give Masik Sofim from one's income. That is income that's a post-tax income, right? Post-tax and post-expenses income. Well, what's the point of view? The point is that anything which I need in order to earn my income, that's not part of my income. So I have to pay taxes in order to earn my income. So the taxes are not part of my income. It doesn't, irrespective of whether it's withheld or paid for after, that doesn't really matter. But taxes are not, taxes part of the price of doing business. Social Security as well. That's part of the price of being in business. Any business expense. You have to pay overheads, or whether it's overheads for the place or whatever it is. Even overheads that have to pay for training, right? Travel. Anything which is necessary in order to be malpractice insurance. Right? A person cannot be in, cannot function in several professions without malpractice. That's the price of doing business. So that's not considered income. That's considered to be what I have to expend in order to make an income, right? So that's rule number one, that anything that is necessary for making income. Then the question is, what about how do we value different kinds of income? For example, incomes from, let's say a person has a business and he plays in the stock market as well. Right? If his business is doing the stock market, that's his business, he's running a fund, or that's the way, then it's clear that that's his business. The question is, how do you evaluate that? When does he give his maisik sofim? When does he say, when does he evaluate his losses and his... So he has to, the person has to pick some point during the year or two times during the year. He has to make a decision. It's up to him. At least once a year. He can either pick, many people pick Elul to be that time. Many people pick January to April because that's when they have to make the cheshbon anyways. But that a person can do on their own to pick 1 point or 2 points or 3 points, whatever makes sense within one's business and that. And then one sort of closes the books at that time and looks back and sees where one is holding over the course of that period of time and determines that just like in a retail store as well, a person may have good month and bad month. So a person can decide when they want the time to be in which they'll make the evaluation, what is their income. Most of the Svarim that discuss this is the Smith in Yerushalayim, this is Minchas Oni, and I think Rav Heinemann has made a similar comment that if a person has a source of income, he has a business, he has a salary, and he also invests in the stock market, so we look at that as one large source of income. We don't separate and say one is business and one is entertainment. We say no, that's one source of income. So the same thing, a person would decide, it's as if he's running two stores. Person has two stores. We don't say you have to get mice or something. Each store separately. You're making life. You're making an income of two stores. So a person may have two stores. One store could be his practice. The other store is his investments. So then he puts all that together and sees it as one business. And again, looks at it as takes a point in time when he has to. It could be that his practice has an even salary that he makes. It could be that his stocks have a wild range. So his income may have that wild range because he's seeing his two sources of income as one large business. When it comes to investments, so there we look at it at the time when a person takes the money out. Right? We don't look at how the investment is doing over time. The investment is increasing. So that is not a machayev to give stuff. It's when I remove the money from the investment, that's when the money is just like I have a piece of property. So the fact that it's accruing a greater value over time, that doesn't mean every year when my piece of my real estate is going up, I have to give my six up. Now, when I sell that piece of that property, so then when I sell this property, then I have to figure out what did I make in this property? Rav Moshe writes, and I'm not sure exactly how to do this practically, Rav Moshe writes was allowed even to incorporate in one's figuring inflation. That if a person bought a property for $20,000 40 years ago, and now he's on the property for $200,000, so he doesn't figure that he made $180,000. He has to figure in somehow that the property, when he bought it, the money had a different buying power. So he has to make that cheshbon in figuring out what is the income. What about the things that my business gives me which are not monetary gifts? For example, health insurance. So Shomazan Orbach writes that as long as one would have bought that anyway, if my business gives me the right to use a gym, but I wouldn't have used the gym, so then I can't. Then that is not considered part of my income. I don't have that right. I don't have to evaluate that right. But let's say I would have joined the club anyway. And now my business gives me that club. I would have bought the health insurance anyway. Now my business gives me health insurance. Then I have to evaluate how much my business is saving me, and that becomes part of my obligation. That becomes part of my income. If I get non-monetary gifts, I'm not like a poskim. If I get monetary gifts, so then one has to give stuck. What happens if I get monetary gifts and they are earmarked monetary gifts? So then also there's a discussion, the Chazon Ish held that one should try. He said it wasn't, it's very soft lush. One should try, not now, maybe at a later time. But in his deity, one should look at it in the following way. What was the intent of the one who's giving it? If the intent of the one who's giving it is to give me a gift, so then I should give my six offers. If the intent was that my father once helped me buy the car, my father once helped me make ends meet, he gave my six up. Now he wants to help me make ends. He wants to help me pay for the tuition. So then he would be upset if now I start, he wanted to help me make ends meet, and now I start giving him my six up from his money. So his intent was that he gave stock, and now he wants to help me out further. Then that a person probably should not give my six up. Sometimes. So wedding gifts, again, if it depends on the situation of the Fasan and Kala, but let's say they are in a situation where they're giving my six up already. So or they should give my six up, unless we are to assume that the people who are giving gifts don't want the Fasan and Kala to give my six up. I thought that the common approach now is that the Fasan and Kala, if they are, obviously if they're in Kol, if in a tight spot, they're not going to be giving. But if they're already earning funds, so then I thought that the idea that we assume the Chassid Kala will give my six up.
You mentioned that income, that in case of investments, you only calculate when you're mostly it, when you get it.
Yeah, yeah.
So what happens if you have your dividends automatically invested? So you never see it, right? It's automatically, for income tax purposes, you have to declare it, but the chutzpah is that you don't see it. So as far as my sub is concerned, is it considered income or not?
There, you're removing it and investing it again.
Well, you don't see it. It's automatically, logically, yes.
So you do it. But
it's only on the books
done
that
for
way.
You.
Right. It's done for you. You don't see it. It's done on they take the money and it's that's
my initial issue. Reaction. My initial reaction would be that then you wouldn't have to pay. You would have to give advice on that. You're really making a decision. Only you've said, instead of making a decision, I'll put on a robot. The robot does it for me. The computer does it for me.
Right. So you never see it. It's like any other investment.
Right. So then I think that you are being both giving votes, you're putting it back in. That'd be my initial reaction.
What about principles?
Right. So, personal... The general approach is that's also machlok to poskim whether basic minimal expenses do not even become part of the salary. So some svarim suggest that that which I need to live, the most basic thing that I need to live, should not be taxable by my six up. But most of the svarim was that. Right, so no, we would say I have to be able to live in a Jewish neighborhood. I have to be able to live in what's the smallest rent I could pay if I move my family to a neighborhood that has a minyan, with his kosher food, so we have the yeshiva. So we have some. It would be a little bit different. But most of them do not accept that. Right, most of them do not accept that I can use that I can deduct my basic needs. They see that my stuff is also basic. Most of them say. Even though I have a hard time explaining it, because if I could take out the business expense, the eating is also a business expense. Then I would have thought Rosa Waldenberg in the Sefer Tisla Yezer, so he discusses that he also defends the practice of taking out the minimal amount that one needs to live. But most of the swarm did not accept that as a
generating the income.
Was that?
Could it be the difference the business is generating the income? Would you give
it
suffer, or
is it the meal about generating? Could be. Okay, I really want to stop because Rabbi Arnton is also on a very tight schedule. We'll have to be convey another time to discuss the addresses to which one you can give stuff. Thank you very much.